In her long and eventful life, Alice Roosevelt Longworth achieved a status that remains unique in American history. She was at once an American icon, the first female celebrity of the 20th century, and a political force of nature whose wit and personality influenced public life for decades. She captured the imagination of the people and the admiration of the lofty. But for all the fascination with her impact on style, glamour, and adventure, it's also revealing that there was always a copy of the American Constitution in her handbag. My guest is Stacy Cordery, author of Alice, Alice Roosevelt, From White House Princess to Washington Power Broker. Stacy, welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you.
It's a delight to have you. I probably also just mentioned there was a snake in that handbag.
There was.
A lot of the time.
There was.
Let's start right at the start, Stacy. I can't imagine more dramatic, tragic circumstances than those which attended the birth and early days of Alice Lee Roosevelt. She's born on February 12th, 1884, and within 2 days, her mother and grandmother would die in the same house on the same day. So Theodore Roosevelt literally running up and down stairs to witness the deaths of the two most important women in his life at that time. I have a sense, Stacy, that that extraordinary background set major themes for her life, a kind of apartness that she would always feel. At least I got that, a sense of solitude within the mass, so to speak. But that, even more markedly, a admiration for her father that would just never leave her. It would always be one of the strongest things. But you speak about those, the influence of that start in life.
Well, I think one of the themes that characterized her early years in would be abandonment. Mm-hmm. She was abandoned by her biological mother through no fault of her mother's, of course. Mm-hmm. And her father, Theodore Roosevelt, in an effort to cope with this devastating loss of his wife and his mother, handed his daughter over to his sister.
Baby.
And, yeah, mm-hmm. and went out west and was apart from her more or less for the next 3 years or so. When he came back with a wife about to wed another woman. And when he married Edith Kermit Corot, she was shortly thereafter pregnant. And so by the time Alice met Edith, her stepmother, Edith was already going to have another child.
Right.
So Alice grew up feeling as though she were the outsider in the nursery, mm-hmm. never quite a part of the family in the same way the other children were. And I think from this grows her many attempts to secure her father's undivided attention.
Right, right. But, you know, and securing his attention and showing this extraordinary loyalty and admiration for him, it's also interesting to me, Stacy, especially as you read as she grows up, that she has so many of his qualities.
Well, she did.
I mean, she really almost mirrors him as kind of a feminine version of T.R.
She did. They were both very strong personalities, mm-hmm. had tremendous charm and charisma, very highly intellectual, both of them.
Right.
Had a passion for books and poetry. Alice had the same wide-ranging intellect her father had. Mm-hmm. They were very much alike. And what became apparent very early on is that Alice had the same love of the spotlight that Theodore Roosevelt had.
Well said, and I'm going to actually use that as a platform for my next question, the love of the spotlight. And you can almost... I can almost put this question in theatrical terms. She had a great sense of timing just in when she was born, because to think of our country as her stage, it was undergoing in that Gilded Age extraordinary forces of its own, industrialization, urbanization, immigration. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the 20th century looming just ahead. So the question to you, Stacy, is could she have done it better? I mean, she sort of came into the world at a time when an iconoclastic personality like hers might make a great effect.
Yes, she did make a great effect, and it was a tremendous sense of timing, although, of course, it wasn't really her timing.
Her timing.
But she used that platform of the White House when she got into the White House as a way to open doors for women, and I think that was partly also good timing as well.
Right, right. When we talk about her in the White House and the Princess Alice years, I'm struck by this, and there was this very interesting thing about her that, again, is echoed throughout the book, but becomes very relevant early in the White House years, this combination of bold action and a shy personality. And I think you're quite right. She captures the public's personality. But what's the essence She captures the public some admiration. But what's the essence of that personality of hers? How would you describe Alice and Princess Alice Shears?
Well, I think that Alice was still, in one sense, acting out her desire for her father's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very busy making a career for himself.
Right.
Her stepmother was very busy having children, or getting over having children and so forth. And so in an effort to gain their attention, she became more and more outrageous in her actions.
Mm-hmm.
And with every outrageous step, there seemed to be an echoing huzzah from the American people.
Right.
Especially America's youth, who found in her this role model. Mm-hmm. And I think this goes back to your question about the timing, because she was this... She was not quite a new woman. That's going to come a little bit later, but she certainly was no Victorian girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the nexus of the brand new century and this brand new boisterous family in the White House, and Alice being the eldest daughter and absolutely feeling free to do what she wanted to do, mm-hmm. was part of the charm of Alice Roosevelt, his first daughter.
And as you say, she had a sense of where the spotlight was
and
a desire to be in it.
She did.
Mm-hmm.
She very much did. And this is partly why I think she could look the other way when her parents chastised her for driving unchaperoned or jumping fully clad into a swimming pool or eating asparagus with gloved hands and doing all those things that today might seem a little unusual, carrying that snake in the purse that was mm-hmm. part of it as well.
You know, it's interesting about all these little pranks and stunts and everything that she did, and I don't even know how to quite phrase this question. I hope I do it correctly, because this misbehavior, to use a word, was, it seems to me, directed toward two targets. One was this kind of the family situation and trying to make herself, you know, prominent within it and distinguish her own personality, but also against Victorian convention.
Right.
But she seemed to know just how far to go.
Yes.
I mean, I read all of that with very close attention. I said, well, she really pushed their buttons, but she knew which ones to push how far. And this is an age where if a woman took an unchaperoned drive with a man and the cars were new, it was you know, the next thing to adultery. So.
Yes. Well, Alice knew that she could drive unchaperoned with her friend Ms. Paul, mm-hmm. but not with a man, and she never did that.
Right.
I think that Alice found in that spotlight the attention she didn't get from her father.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of approbation from society was addictive in a sense. I mean, it fueled her wanting to do more and be more. But at one level, what I really think is true about Alice is that she just was her own person.
Yes.
She did what she wanted to do.
That's
and I don't think, not for a minute, that she lived her life looking for the spotlight, mm-hmm. or saying, oh, gee, what new thing can I do today that would, you know, bring the news media my way? I think she did what she wanted to do, and the fact that it had a wonderful echo in the larger community was fine and dandy with her.
She was authentic.
Yes, I believe she was.
You know, it's interesting because, and I think that's right on target, she was indeed authentic, and that was her spirit. This we might call it rebelliousness or anything else, but it was really Alice being Alice. Mm-hmm. The influences that formed her intellectually are also very interesting, because this wasn't just mindless. I mean, she was never a mindless person. And I am impressed, I think any 21st century reader would be, with her self-education, basically. I mean, I don't think there was much evidence of formal schooling, at least that I detected. But the reading is voracious.
The reading was voracious her entire life long.
Mm-hmm.
She was the only child who was given a full run of her father's library. She said she read the Bible several times through just to say she had. She was really schooled at her parents' knees.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, as I'm sure you know, lots of people know, the Roosevelts prized books very highly.
Yes.
So they read aloud to their children. They put an emphasis on good books, but never cramped Alice's style.
Mm-hmm.
So she was an autodidact. She never went to formal school except very, very briefly, and that was enough for her. Thank you very much. She didn't want that kind of she didn't want to be programmed sitting in a desk and having a schedule. She'd rather do it her own,
mm-hmm.
own way.
You know, I was struck by that, and I'd also have to say the pleasure she took in games of wordplay,
mm-hmm.
because in later years especially, she'd be very famous for her use of words, of language, of wit. But this was all seems to be formed right at the start. You know, Stacy, in addition to the American public's fascination with her, it's probably fair to say about much of the rest of the world was.
The world was fascinating.
And I'd like you to talk about that a bit, because there were diplomatic missions she carried out on behalf of her father and the White House, particularly to Asia. Mm-hmm. What was their effect? How was she as a diplomat? I mean, what does that side of her life reveal to us?
I think that side of Alice Roosevelt's life reveals to us that she was the first daughter in a very political family.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Roosevelt never made a misstep. In 1905, she went on a multi-country tour of Asia, where she was treated like royalty. Yeah. She was called Princess Alice. Mm-hmm. She stayed in all the royal palaces and got the royal treatment everywhere. She was given gifts like she was born to the throne. And she was a goodwill ambassador for her father. She was the first daughter to serve in this capacity. He sent her, Theodore Roosevelt sent her abroad, knowing that she would serve in this way. So she, she christened things and she opened things and she dined and met with people. And she accompanied the Secretary of War, William Howard Taft, on this journey. And where Alice might do very controversial things in the United States, mm-hmm. she did not step over that line at all in Asia. So
right.
she clearly had a sense of what was appropriate and what was not appropriate. And she enjoyed herself. She had a good time.
That's well said. She really did have a sense of what was at stake. I mean, this was no sort of just ceremonial celebrity tour. She never was up. Turning that around to the domestic side, let's talk about her her entry into American political life, domestic politics in particular. This is extremely interesting, and here's a theme that's going to go throughout her life. Her father, of course, very famously declared he wasn't going to, he was going to serve that second term, wasn't it, and then not run for a third. And then mounted the Bull Moose progressive attempt in 1912. And it seems to me that Alice was really marked by that, that Bull Moose politics, progressive Republican politics, was a major theme in her life, something she really adopted. And I'm wondering, Stacey, if you agree with that. And if so, what was the mechanism for that? Was it just affection for her father's politics or a sense of her own conviction or both?
That's a very good question. If I can back up for just a bit. Alice Roosevelt was married in 1906 in a spectacular White House ceremony. Mm-hmm. And she wed a representative from Ohio, Nicholas Longworth, mm-hmm. who was a Republican, of course. She could not marry a Republican. And this wonderful ceremony launched Alice on her life of independence, and she hoped wealth, because Alice was always interested in more independence and more money. And she got some of both once she was Mrs. Longworth. But she also discovered that that White House that she'd been trying to escape from all those years as first daughter looked pretty good once she was out of it. So she spent a fair amount of time, in fact, just about every afternoon after she was married, back at the White House visiting with her family. And I think once she wed a congressman, mm-hmm. she decided she would take up the study of politics. And so she did it thoroughly, as she did every other intellectual endeavor. And she learned about the Republican Party. She learned about foreign policy, which always interested her more than domestic policy. And then by the time 1912 came around, she'd been married 6 years or so and was still very much her father's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And Alice said that she found the Progressive Party platform in 1912 not one iota too radical. She was in favor of all of it. She did have some questions about TR's stand on the judiciary mm-hmm. and the recall of judges. But she supported women's suffrage at that point in her life. And so she was committed to the Bull Moose principles. And in later life, when she was in her 70s and 80s and people said, oh, you're a Republican, she said, I'm a progressive. I'm a Bull Moose Republican. So she made very plain that she still found that progressive side of the party.
So those were her committed political principles.
Yes.
That she was faithful to throughout her life.
She will become more conservative in her middle years. Mm-hmm. But I think she will return to that progressive republicanism later.
Well, let's talk about one of the elements of conservatism that kind of evidenced itself fairly early, and that is isolationism. In the sense of her opposition to Woodrow Wilson's League of Nations, she was really spearhead an important part of that opposition. Why was she such a strong isolationist?
She was an isolationist for many reasons, I think, and she will be isolationist before World War II as well. Theodore Roosevelt is going to come up with an idea very similar to Woodrow Wilson's League of Nations.
Right.
But when Woodrow Wilson came up with it, it wasn't TR's idea.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilson and TR had lots of bad blood. Alice was very loyal to her father, and Wilson's ideas were anathema to her for that reason alone. I think that before the United States got involved in World War I, the Roosevelt family was interested in being involved. T.R. was pushing Wilson to get involved. Mm-hmm. And Alice was all for that as well. And then all four Roosevelt sons went off to fight. Mm-hmm. Quentin did not come back. This was devastating to the family. And then Alice will fight to keep the United States out of the League of Nations. That will be where she will take a leading role in the Battalion of Death. Mm-hmm. They called her the Colonel in reference to her father. Mm-hmm. The Colonel of the Battalion of Death to fight this, turns out, successful battle to keep the United States from joining the League. Mm-hmm. By the time we get to World War II, Alice will be on the board of directors of America First.
But this is more problematic, isn't it? Because America First's membership gets itself problematic for her.
It does. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
But when we were in war, she was clearly devoted to America's success in that war, did everything she possibly could.
She was, mm-hmm. yes, mm-hmm. of course. And she patriotism was one of those important themes
mm-hmm.
that runs through her life. Yes, mm-hmm. she was very, very strong patriot.
Very strong patriot. Of course, the World War II era in the 30s also bring up the tension between Eleanor and the other side of the Roosevelt family. Now, this is very interesting because here it's, and you do an excellent job of describing it, but the personal and the political seem so entwined.
They were always entwined for Alice Longworth, I think.
Mm-hmm. Was there resentment in just not being in the White House?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, there was some of that. Mm-hmm. Franklin Roosevelt was called feather duster in the family. He was the lightweight. You know, people wondered why Eleanor married him. Yes. And Alice was banking on her husband, perhaps, to get to the White House. Certainly her brother, Ted Roosevelt, had all the hallmarks of presidential material. Mm-hmm. And Alice in the 1920s was a great decade for her. You know, her husband became Speaker of the House of Representatives. Her brother is Assistant Secretary of the Navy. And that position was one Roosevelt used to get to the presidency. She had her great friend William Borah was chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
Right.
So the three most important men in her life, because by this time T.R. had died, mm-hmm. were in very public positions of tremendous power.
But none of them were president.
None of them ever became president. And who did? Mm-hmm. As she put it, nemesis down the river came mm-hmm. Franklin.
When you speak of the men in her life, obviously we're talking about the loves in her life. And love in Eleanor, love in Alice Roosevelt is a particularly interesting topic because that marriage to Nicholas Longworth that you've mentioned, the congressman from Ohio, Cincinnati to be precise, was very complex, wasn't it, Stacy? I mean, it seems there's affection and estrangement at the same time. In that he was a womanizer, a drinker, things she couldn't really tolerate. But there was a kind of a liaison there that had to be respected between the two women, understanding. But the really interesting complication in the love life of Alice Roosevelt was, of course, the affair with Senator Borah of Idaho, which led to the birth of Paulina, her daughter. Speak to that. I mean, she was as unconventional in love, I would think, as in everything else she did.
She was. And what I gleaned from all the research that went into this book is it was not Nick's womanizing nor his alcoholism that in the end turned Alice away from him. It was his political abandonment of her in 1912 when Nick Longworth chose the Republican Party instead of Theodore Roosevelt and the Progressive Party. Mm. And she was really hurt by this. And you can imagine Nick was hurt as well because his wife stood with her father and not him. So by the time we get to Alice's love affair with Senator William Borah of Idaho, a lot of water was under the bridge mm-hmm. for the Longworths. And they had what we might today call an open marriage, I would say.
Very revolutionary for its time, though.
Perhaps it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a different era, and I don't know how many Washington couples were living their lives similarly mm-hmm. to the Longworths because people were more discreet then.
Right.
And the media was different then, and they just mm-hmm. didn't talk about it. So Nick certainly had his affairs, and there were a group of women called Nick's Girls, and they were pretty well known to lots of people. Alice had a kind of an intellectual affair with a Cincinnati attorney, very erudite man.
Graydon.
Joseph Graydon. Fascinating, mm-hmm. fascinating chapter in her life. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, set the stage for her love of Senator Borah.
That's really brought out because the Graydon affair, Graydon really looks erudite, elegant, and everything else, but but very much appealing to her on the intellectual side. And I think Bora brought that same kind of intellectual excitement, plus the physical adventure, reminiscent perhaps of T.R.
Plus politics,
right,
absolutely. Because Graydon really was not interested in politics, but Bora lived and died politics.
That's right. And another aspect of this that gets started in Alice Roosevelt's, well, it doesn't just start at this point, but begins to mature and really become a phenomenon of its own, is the salon that her house effectively became here in Washington. At the same time I enjoyed reading your book, I was reading one called The Grand Surprise about Leo Lerman in New York City from 1940 to 1990 among the cultural elite of New York. And I kept thinking, my God, in both these cities and in that era, this kind of thing was really quite a phenomenon. And she put herself right at the top of it. She was really Washington's major. I don't even know what word to use for the power she exercised.
Her house was the hot ticket. Mm-hmm. Presidents came to her home, senators, congressmen, Supreme Court justices, intellectuals, artists, poets, scientists. Right. Everyone came to Mrs. Longworth's home. And this was true both while Nick was alive and after he died. He died right before Franklin Roosevelt took office. And I think that the salon part of her life, which was extensive, you know, almost 5 decades, was critical to the working of Washington, D.C., because in her drawing room was the place where people met from both parties, from all persuasions. They worked out their disagreements on neutral ground. They had a drink. They chatted about it. Then when they went back up to the Hill, things worked maybe better up there. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, I'm a women's historian, and so often people say to me, you know, why, Alice, you're just studying someone who's a power behind the throne. And I want to say, oh, no, so much more than that. And this is one aspect of that sort of hidden but critically, profoundly important woman's culture, this salon that Alice ran. I don't think she would have called it a salon. She didn't like that sort of phrase. Mm-hmm. She had, as always in life, she had the people to her home she wanted to have to her home.
That's exactly right.
So she didn't set out to cultivate a certain group of people. If she didn't like you, you didn't come a second time.
Yeah, but it's interesting about the people she did like and did come. I mean, she was a Bull Moose Republican all of her life. There was no question about that. Strongly anti-communist, and yet supportive of Lyndon Johnson in 1964, voting for him, largely on what he was doing at that time. Had a very high regard for the Kennedys, and I think it was largely because of their style as well as their stands. So, you know, here you have someone who really was, in today's terms, a mover and shaker, I suppose is what we might say, but in a style, that salon style, Stacy, that really I don't think exists in Washington anymore.
I don't think it does.
Mm-hmm. And there's another aspect of this, too, that I really want to bring out, because we talked about her conservatism all of her life, and this is a very strong point of emphasis in this book. The way she decided that Joe McCarthy and his witch hunts and his persona were anathema. Speak about that, because it's on very particular Alice Roosevelt Longworth type grounds.
Well, she didn't like Joe McCarthy also because he was a drunk.
Yes.
And that sort of excess did not appeal to her.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sort of a famous sally, but Joe McCarthy came to Alice's house to pick her up. They had kind of a blind date, they called it. And he appeared with an orchid in hand, and he sort of said to her, I'm going to call you Alice. And she looked at him and she said, the truckman, the trash man, and my gardener. I think I've not got that quite right. The gardener, the truckman, the trash man on my street may call me Alice, but you, Senator McCarthy, will call me Mrs. Longworth.
Well done, well done.
She really put him in his place, and by that time she was very clear on the excesses of Senator McCarthy and that it was all puffery, and she was not having anything to do with that.
This is a remarkable life, Stacy Cordery, and you've done a remarkable job in recounting it
for us.
You really have. As we move toward the end of it, I have to offer you this comment. She also had this interest in the occult.
She did, yes.
And at an early point in the book, you say, for Alice, what was strange was always special. And I think she approached that way. I was struck by the importance of February in her life. You know, born in February, I think her daughter was born in February, her daughter was married in February. She died, of course, on the 20th of February, 1980.
Right.
You know, it's almost a century long life.
96 years.
So as we conclude our conversation, I'd love for you to give me a sense of just how special that life was, just however briefly you might do it, in the sense of will we ever see its like again?
I don't think there ever will be another Alice Roosevelt Longworth. I think her era has passed. I think we won't see an autodidact like that again. She was the most famous first daughter. I mean, all her life she was a first daughter, known for that. And I think first daughters since her era have become other things, doctors, lawyers, but they haven't clung to this quite the way Alice has, or more precisely the way America has always identified Alice Longworth as the first daughter. Mm-hmm. She was charming and charismatic and so very smart that I don't think there'll be another.
Right. And the mark that she left, would it be wonderful? There will never be another Alice Roosevelt Longworth. I fully agree with you. But I personally pray that we could revive some of those wonderful gifts of wit and repartee and sort of intellectual conversation across narrow divisions in Washington that she so well represented.
She had a tremendous wit, and she used it to include people, and she also used it to exclude people. She used it to put her cousin Franklin mm-hmm. and Eleanor in place. But she was very aware of that, and I don't know that there's much of that sort of wit.
Yeah, I love the way you described that, both shield and sword.
Right, exactly right.
Stacy, wonderful book.
Thank you.
And I actually look forward to the next one.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us. You have been listening to Dialogue. My guest today was Stacy Cordery. I'm George Sestancia, producer and host of Dialogue. Our technical director is John Tyler, our production engineer is Sharana Harris, and our assistant producer is Keila Jackson. Dialogue is a production of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Established by Congress in 1968, the center is our nation's official and living memorial to the 28th President of the United States, Woodrow Wilson.